Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to today's edition of American Exposé. My name is not Chris Turner. Today's date is July the 29th, 05. Almost said 19. A little behind. My name is Tim Barron. Many of you know me as Timothy Revere. Chris was my producer. I had a radio show on another network, and Chris was my producer, and Chris and I have been friends for a long, long time. And John and Sandra and I have been friends for a long, long time. I helped John out when he had the office in South Austin, CSIN, the CSIN office down there. And he had the studio there and was broadcasting from there, and I filled in for him a couple of times down there, too, so some of you may remember me from then. So I'm going to be filling in for the first hour. Unfortunately, I have another engagement of another type. I also have gotten back into doing some music, and hopefully soon we'll be doing some bumper music for Chris and hopefully John, too, in the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is a wake-up call for you people. We need money at RBN now. If we don't, we're going to be off the air. I haven't anything to give Republic but my time. They offered to call me on the phone and pay for the bill for me to host the show, but I refused to even do that. I called in and I'm paying for this call myself. I can't do much, but whatever I can do. I told John I would give him my last $100 if it came down to that. I would give him my last $100. This network must continue. It is our only avenue to the truth. There is no other avenues to the truth. There's other avenues that say they are preaching the truth, but people, the other networks are useless. This is the only place, people, we need to keep it alive. Please support this network, and I'm not talking $5 and $10 donations this time, folks. John has set this thing up so that it was supporting itself, and things just happen. You know, you've seen the bumper sticker. Things happen. Things have happened. We need money to keep this network going. So please, dig deep in your pockets and in your hearts and support John and Sandra. They've given everything they have got to do this, and I would hate to see them lose it because they're dear friends of mine. Today, Chris likes to talk about Agenda 21, so do I. I'm sitting here looking at a 350-page document called Agenda 21. I'm also looking at another document that I received from the EPA called Protecting Water Resources with Smart Growth, and I'm going to tell you during the program how to get a hold of that. And I also have an old buddy of mine that I had for a guest that Chris has had on as a guest. This man has a title 2 lines long. And when we come back, I'm going to introduce you to that man, but first I'm going to read his title. My name is Timothy Revere. I'm filling in for Chris Gerner. Please support RBN, and we'll be back. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to American Exposé. My name is Timothy Revere. I'm filling in for Chris Gerner, who had to be away today. And it's going to be a tag team operation. I said before I've got an engagement that's early this evening, and so we're going to kind of tag team. And Sam, another good friend of ours, Sam from in Missouri, is going to fill in the host for the second hour. We're going to have Jim Beers up in just a second. First of all, I would like you all to write down a telephone number. This is the telephone number to the EPA. You call 800-490-9198. 800-490-9198. And you be very nice to these people and tell them that you would like to have a copy of the EPA manual entitled Protecting Water Resources with smart growth. Protecting water resources with smart growth. This is the EPA's rule book, actually the globalist rule book, that shows you how they're going to, in the future, control every piece of property by watershed. And ladies and gentlemen, if one drop of rain falls on your land, you live in a watershed. 490-9198. Call them and ask them for the manual entitled Protecting Water Resources with Smart Growth. What I was saying a little while ago about other networks not giving you the full truth, there are people on other networks that will talk about smart growth, but they won't tell you that smart growth comes from Agenda 21, the United Nations document, Agenda 21. And it is a 40-chapter document. I'm sitting here holding it, 350 pages, that controls every aspect of our lives. And I have my good friend Jim Beards on the phone with me, and I'm going to give you his title. He is a retired refuge manager, special agent, and wildlife biologist, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And, Mr. Jim, it is an honor to be able to talk to you again, man, and have you up on the air with me.
Well, thanks for having me.
You said a minute ago that you went to an Agenda 21 or an anti-Agenda 21 conference, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, right? Reno, Nevada, about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Tell us what went on up there, Jim.
Well, I was asked to go to it because I had been asked about 2 months ago to edit, rewrite a chapter for a publication called Freedom 21, which is an attempt by the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. They're a group that works with university students and university professors who are trying to get the truth out and trying to get practical solutions to all of these things being brought up by these folks at the universities, bad people, trying to give good alternatives to that, workable things that don't involve federal government and the UN taking over everything that we hold dear. Anyway, because I was asked to rewrite that chapter, which I did, and they asked me to go out there and talk about predators and invasive species, and I spoke about that. And during the 3 days at the meeting, I was just amazed at how much I learned and thought I knew but didn't know about sustainable development, sustainable medicine, sustainable education, and how those things all tie together with the environmental matters and animal rights issues that I've been dealing with for the last 7 or 8 years. I write about those things and talk about them. And it's just amazing how that all ties together with the sort of worldwide attempt to make our government like Western European governments and to sort of treat the rest of the world as though it's some sort of a wildlife or nature playground where the central government of the UN and the powerful Western nations like us control the populations in Africa and Asia and South America and kind of control what they can do and keep them from developing anymore while we sort of enjoy our developed countries, if you will. And you know, the way it's all tied together with population control and other things, it was a real eye-opener, let me tell you. They had a really good group of people are giving talks and selling things and books and that. It was really very, very worthwhile thing. It's called Freedom 21, and the next meeting next year will be in Covington, Kentucky, I believe.
And if people wanted to learn about the Freedom 21 conferences, they could just press Freedom 21 into their computer and they'd go right to it, I'm sure, right?
You bet. I think they'd get more than they could use for a long time.
There's more than I could ever read.
Yep.
Explain for those of those listeners out there that may not know what an invasive species is.
Well, invasive species is something that's just really, it's a term that's always been around in the biology departments in the study of biology for probably for a couple of centuries. And really what it refers to is a newly arrived species in an area, whether that's a bird or a tree or a certain kind of grass or some sort of mammal or fish. And they can arrive in many different ways. Cattle egrets were blown across the Atlantic, they think, about 150 years ago in a hurricane and landed in Brazil and then sort of spread over and up through the Caribbean and then up into the United States. We've heard stories about killer bees being in Mexico and then in South Texas and whatever. Animals move for various reasons. Animals that have never been here get here. Animals that used to be here come here. People bring animals and plants here because they want to grow crops or they want beautiful plants around their house or they want certain kind of fish in the streams and in the lakes, or they want certain kind of birds that they can hunt, like pheasants or chuckers. And there's just all kinds of ways that animals are moved around. And it even refers to an animal like, say, the largemouth bass, which up till about 120 years ago really didn't occur hardly at all in the West. But then out in the western United States, they began building large reservoirs over streams that used to either have catfish or trout in them. And these large lakes were ideal habitat for largemouth bass, which people enjoy fishing for. So the states began bringing largemouth bass out and stocking them in places that they had never had them before. We see the same thing with pike and walleyes. Muskies are now in the south where they didn't used to be before because they've got cold water below a lot of these large reservoirs in many places where they never had real cold water before. It's ideal for both trout and, say, for muskies. So there's all kinds of mixing of plant and animals. Now, with that said, about 15 years ago, the same people that started the endangered species business, both at the UN and in Western Europe and here in the United States, and have sort of shepherded this business of the federal government, in the United States and the UN also, taking over jurisdiction for any plants or animals that they say are in short supply in a certain area, that shorter than they should be or shorter than they were, that they can call them endangered or threatened. And then suddenly, instead of, say, an African nation having control over those particular animals and what they do with them, or a state in the United States like Colorado or Vermont or Oregon or whatever having jurisdiction over them, federal government takes jurisdiction over them. That's the endangered species model. And everything, all the trouble you hear about endangered species really comes from that sort of legal framework of the federal government recently declaring that they can just push our Constitution aside, which they do, and take over jurisdiction from state governments of any plant or animal that they say there should be more of. Well, with that model to go by, these same university professors and federal bureaucrats and a lot of state bureaucrats and these environmental organizations and animal rights organizations that are gathering a lot of money and power through all of this, they also have started to say, well, you know, the federal government should also take control of invasive species. And publicly and in front of Congress, they all talk about, well, these species, we just mean the ones that are harmful to the ecosystem, the kudzu that's just covering all the trees, or the killer bees that are in now spreading north.
Oh, yeah, but Jim, that couldn't we easily say that if all of the invasive species in this country were removed, we'd starve to death, wouldn't we?
Oh, we'd not only starve to death, we would have less timber to cut. We'd have dirtier water in some of the Great Lakes. The thing is, remember this. The Constitution put all the plants and animals under the state government. And we started seeing exceptions to this about 100 years ago when the federal government, with everybody's approval, signed some international treaties for migratory birds, mainly because they were concerned about ducks and geese that were being hunted up in Canada and hunted in Mexico. And the guys in Louisiana were worried that the guys in Illinois were going to kill the ducks before they got down there.
Exactly.
You know, So they signed a treaty which sort of took all of those migratory birds on the treaties and put them under the federal government. And we're seeing that argument now being made about invasive species and all of these animals, that the federal government should have a role in protecting the ecosystem, which is absolutely a meaningless term. But they're using it to justify a whole new federal program that's going to take a lot of our tax money, take away a lot more property rights, and make the state more subservient.
Hold that thought right there. We're fixing to go into a break, so hold it right there. They're fixing to take our property rights because that's what they're doing. We're going to be right back. My name is Timothy Revere. I'm hosting for Chris today. Y'all stay with us. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Timothy Revere. I'm sitting in for Chris Gerner today. A reminder, please support this network. The mailing address for Republic Broadcasting Network is 1015, that is 1015 South Mays Street, M-A-Y-S Street, Suite 100, 1015 South Mays, M-A-Y-S Street, Round Rock, that's two words, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. The main office number is 800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. We need your help, people. We need big help. If we don't, we're going to lose this network. We're speaking today with Jim Beers, a retired Fish and Wildlife Service man of all trades amongst that bunch of Indians. But he's come over to our side, and he's helping us learn what's taking our freedoms away, like our property rights. Tell us about it, Jim.
Well, we were talking about invasive species and how the federal bureaucrats and the state bureaucrats and the university professors and the environmental and animal rights groups like the Nature Conservancy, Wildlife Federation, the Humane Society of the United States all have these agendas to do away with natural resource use in that. And the way they're doing it is by the federal government taking over jurisdiction over what they say are invasive species, and with Congress giving them a mandate, which they're in the process of trying to do, for the federal government to restore or maintain native ecosystems, there is no end to what the federal government can start taking from your property or telling you what to do or stopping you from doing, whether it's fishing or trapping or horseback riding or what. Now, when they say invasive species, they mean everything that they say wasn't here 1776 or 1850 or when your state became a state, or anything that they say was introduced by humans. They want to make that distinction, too. So they just want to say anything that they want to say is invasive, just like they say that they wanted to protect endangered species, but then they start protecting endangered subspecies and endangered races and endangered populations and population segments and even distinct population segments. I mean, there's no end that they won't go to.
Sounds to me like patriotic Christian Americans are the true endangered species.
Well, really, property owners,
yeah.
State governments as real entities other than just the regional offices for the federal government are really what this is all about. And then the politicians in Washington and the heads of these agencies and most of their personnel anymore are in fact going to be people from the Humane Society and the Nature Conservancy and the Wildlife Federation and people that have a belief in socialist government where the central government runs everything, tells you how to live your life, where you can live, what you can do with property or not, take your property away when they want to, tell you what you can and cannot do day in and day out. They look on that, the people that are now coming into power and pushing these things, as the way to get their their desires for the way the rest of us should live in place.
Well, that Jim, in reality, the people, most people that live in the cities, they have no conception of what real property ownership is all about, and they don't understand, and they, frankly, they would rather live in a socialist government.
Well, you know, as I get older, I think there's a lot of truth to the fact that the people aren't too anxious to learn more about these values in our society, because it's like when they vote, a lot of times they vote for people or they want to support new laws that they think are going to give them something.
Right. Something for nothing. Yep.
Right. And it doesn't matter to them that you and I are paying more taxes, or that you and I lost our property, or that you and I can't hunt anymore, or we can't take our boat down, our airboat through
or
we can't cut trees anymore.
Yeah, or us poor little small-time cattle people out here, we're going to have to chip all our animals on the farm. It's insanity.
Yeah, that's right, but they don't want to think about that aspect of it. All they think about is the magazine they read that tells them that, oh, there should be more buffalo out in the Midwest. The terrible Europeans did away with them all, and the federal government should clear large areas out there and let it go back to native grasses and native flowers and let buffalo wander around out there belly high, and kind of like they're doing with wolves right now in the West, and that somehow that'll be great. The fact that they're going to run ranchers out of business, that some little kid visiting his grandparents on their ranches gets killed by one of these animals, or that you can't have buffalo wandering around out there when you're trying to grow corn and where you're trying to drive cars and everything, but then they'll say, oh, there shouldn't be roads out there. And the people in the cities and people with money, and they'll say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. They don't care that your house gets done away with, or your mother has to sell her house and move out of where she wanted to be and go into a home because she can't afford to buy something else. They just have that notion that they're getting something for nothing.
Here comes another break. This is our bottom of the hour break. I believe I see the clock. Yep, it's the bottom of the hour break. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay with us. My name is Timothy. I'm substitute hosting for Mr. Chris Turner, my good friend. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to American Exposé. We're speaking with Jim Beers today, who's telling us all about all kinds of goodies. I would like to say hello to a couple of friends of mine that I know are listening. One of them is my riding buddy, Pete, and another one that would be my riding buddy, Hippie Biker. If he lived around here, we would be riding buddies, and you'd be riding buddies with me and John and Pete, and we're sure sorry, John, got in a deal like that and have to have all this just happen at one time. But people, please support this broadcast, support this network, Republic Broadcasting. Please, 800-724-2719. It's a free call. Call and donate some money, folks. Keep this truth on the air. And any of you people that are listening in Bastrop on the micro, the fine micro broadcast we have going on in Bastrop right now. If y'all want to hear me sing and pick a little bit, y'all come down to Maxine's Cafe on Main Street in downtown Bastrop tonight at 7 p.m. and you can hear what it's all about. And welcome back, Mr. Jim.
Well, it's good to be back.
I'm so happy to talk to you. I just it's been too long, my friend.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But this Agenda 21 and this invasive species, if they really get this invasive species going, I mean, it's all over the website, AmericanExpose.com. If you go to American Expose, that's American spelled with a K, AmericanExpose.com, you can see the maps where they're actually, there's not going to be people allowed. And Jim said it a while ago.
That's correct.
This is the elite playground. That's what they're trying to turn it into. And it's almost down to the pitchfork, tar, and feather stage, ain't it, Jim?
That's true. It's getting a lot of impetus at the federal level, and a lot of the federal politicians are spending a lot of money on it. And the federal bureaucrats are working very hard with the UN people. And the idea that all of the federal land should be linked together with wild areas, they call them wild land corridors, and that the federal government should be controlling endangered species and invasive species everywhere is really the basis for the federal government, the central government, exercising almost the authority of that we used to see in the Soviet Union or something, or even in today's Russia, where there's a very limited concept of private property. And the federal government can do whatever it wants or tell you what to do, and you have to do it. The idea that you have guaranteed rights and freedoms in your Constitution are just being swept away by the signing of treaties with the UN.
That and the Supreme Court decision a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that. And with these new authorities for the federal agencies, like invasive species, that, like endangered species, they try to base on UN treaties or UN conventions, because those, when we sign them and if they're ratified by the Senate, they then supersede our Constitution.
Yeah.
And you can see the same thing going on right now with the UN has just been all abuzz for the last 2 years about small arms and ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's the trouble in Africa, and that's the trouble in Asia. That's what causes governments to be unstable, and that's what is keeping dictatorships in place, and blah, 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 and all this nonsense. And it's just exactly like went on in the late 60s about endangered species. The world was falling apart. Thousands of species were getting extinct every day almost. And,
Is that when that started, Jim? When exactly did the endangered species thing really get going?
It got going in the middle 60s. With federal bureaucrats in this country, protectionist-type people, people who did not believe in logging or grazing of grass or hunting or fishing or trapping, and believed that the federal government, all of its land should be just like national parks. There shouldn't be any tree cutting going on there. There shouldn't be any grazing. In fact, there shouldn't be any roads in there, and people should only a few people at a time should be left in there, and they should pay a lot of money to go do it.
You know, there's another old buddy of mine that has a saying, and I really like it. Old Derry Brownfield always says, if you find an endangered species on your property, do the three S's. Shoot, shovel, and shut up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
you dang sure don't want them, anybody knowing, you know, if you find some kind of bird or something that's supposedly endangered like this ivory-billed peckerwood they got going on up in Derry's location, up near Derry's.
Yeah, they're in eastern Arkansas.
Yeah.
They've only said that they've seen one, and they've only got a little bitty, a very blurry video that you can't really tell what it is. And they've been looking for almost 2 years now.
And is it 5 million acres they're taking?
Well, they're looking at 5 million acres. They've already put close to 1 million as a target. They've closed down over 5,000 acres. And, you know, they're already saying that certain water projects for water improvement on a couple of those rivers have to be stopped.
You know, when I heard about that, I got my map out. And do you know that area, that particular area, you could probably chunk a rock from there to Stuttgart, Arkansas. You know what Stuttgart, Arkansas is, don't you?
You betcha. I've hunted ducks down there.
It's the duck hunting capital of the world.
Yep. And they have said that they won't do anything to duck hunting, but it says right in the old books about this ivory-billed woodpecker that it, quote, looks like a pintail.
There you go.
So, I mean, you tell me that they're not going to shut that down. If anybody believes that, they ought to go buy a bridge up in Brooklyn.
I wonder where old Dick Cheney's going to take his Supreme Court buddy duck hunting now.
Well, I mean, where are you guys down there going to go fishing? You're not going to be able to go through there fishing.
That's crazy.
They're going to say that spring turkey hunters are scaring the birds when they're nesting.
And
they're going to say that you can't cut any trees anywhere around there because it may be a tree that some ivory-billed woodpecker may want to use or make a home in. I mean, there's no end to the mischief that's going to come just out of this one thing. And the truth is, if the darn woodpeckers go extinct, if there are any, if they go extinct in a couple of years, the government will still have easements and more land acquired for this without even substantiating that there's a woodpecker out there, even one. If the Congress has already promised somewhere between $10 and $20 million.
Boy, and let me tell you what, if anybody, there's a local group out here called the Lost Pines and Prairies Land Trust. And listeners, if anybody comes to you and tell you that they're trying to protect the environment and they want you to sign a conservation easement, you run from those people as fast as you can, either that or run them off your land as fast as you can get them, because they are there to take your land. I promise you, there are different kinds of land trusts. Do not do anything that has anything to do with the land trust or conservation easement, because I called three different bankers myself and asked if I could borrow money on a piece of property that has a conservation easement on it, and they two of them used a couple of words I won't use, but no, it's not your land anymore. If there's a conservation easement taken on it, it's the government's land. You have no right whatsoever, nor will your children, nor will your grandchildren. We're losing our land, people, and that's why we need to support this network. This network is the only network out there telling the truth about Agenda 21. This is the only network that's telling the truth where smart growth and sustainable development came from. It came from the United Nations document, Agenda 21. Every aspect of it is being implemented at every level of our government as we speak. And it's being sold as smart growth and sustainable development. They won't tell you the truth. We must support this network, please, people. I just can't. Besides the fact John and Sandra are my good friends and I've seen them give up everything they own for this thing to get this thing going, you know, it's heartbreaking to me. And please, people, Jim, you know what I'm trying to say. You know what it's all about.
You bet. And it's only by coming together like the Founding Fathers did, from a lot of diverse backgrounds, different religions and different levels of society with different concerns about the way the British were treating us, and banding together, that we've got any hope at all.
Well,
and that's very difficult to do, because the British were treating us, and dictators do this the same as all of us are being treated right now. Right now, these fellas in Arkansas that we're talking about, you know, most of the listeners will sit there and say, well, I don't fish over there. I don't hunt ducks over there. Well, I don't cut any trees over there.
How about let's talk to Bill from Missouri and see where he lives over.
Sure.
How about it, Bill from Missouri? You there?
Yeah, it's Will. Will.
Will. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
No problem, Tim and Jim. Jim, I've spoken with you before on air on Michael Shaw's broadcast, but I just wanted you asked the question, Tim, and I just wanted to put in my 2 cents worth here on that specific question. When did this shift start happening? I was at a rally back in the 70s,
uh-huh.
And it was in Berserkly, California. At People's Park. I believe it was about 1972. And what it was an anti-war freedom rally. Now, as most people know, we went through the freedom of speech program, then we demonstrated against the war in Vietnam, and then it basically went from hippies to yippies to yuppies. So, in a brief nutshell. But I think it was about 1972, almost positive, 71 or 72, I was at a very large, like a love-in or rally. And, there was a lot of different, lots of music going on, lots of talking going on. But through the course of the afternoon there were, men, coming through that had, cardboard boxes. And they were handing out cloisonné. Do you know what cloisonné is?
No.
Oh, cloisonné is like you see these little pins. They have a metal back on them, and then they have like an enamel front.
Okay, yep.
Okay, that's called cloisonné. It's a form of jewelry making.
I see.
But they had these cloisonné pins, and they were shaped in the of a lowercase e, very compact and tight. But about just, if you looked at it, it's just an e. It looked like a circle. But and then they had a 3x5 card hooked onto that. Now, I don't know who these people were, And I didn't keep the, I kept the pin and the card for some time on my dashboard, and then somebody wanted it, and I just gave it away, thinking there would be plenty more to come, but I never saw them again. But at that particular point, what that was the shift, and you're a songwriter, I'm a songwriter. I wrote in a song, one of the lyric lines is, that, and our eyes were turned from freedom to ecology on that day.
Oh, man.
Okay, and so what that was everyone was wearing peace symbols, you know.
Yeah.
And it was generally we'd make our own. That would be kind of like the cool thing to do.
Yeah, right.
All right, but you could go to the head shops and buy them. But anyway, these guys were handing out boxes and boxes and boxes of them, and it was save the world, save the planet, one world, love Earth, love America, love God, love. But it was all about our world. It was turning our eyes from freedom to ecology on that day.
And this was when?
Approximately 1972, People's Park, Berserkly, California.
I'll be dang. That's interesting. Even I learned something today. Golly.
Well, good. Keep up the good work, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you very much.
And,
glad to hear from another songwriter and a fella from Missouri. And, Jim, you got any...
Yeah, that 1972 was when the United States signed CITES, C-I-T-E-S, that stands for the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. And everybody loved that. I mean, it was going to control endangered species. We signed the convention, and it ratified that convention. And 6 months later, the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, was passed. And then that thing just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger since that time. Now, I'm 64 years old. And I look back on that period. I was in the Navy in the middle 60s after I got out of college. And then I went to work for the federal government in the late 60s when I got out of the Navy, Fish and Wildlife Service. And I look back on that period, and I didn't realize it at the time, but, you know, we talk about that period of war protests, free love, gals taking off their tops and dancing and Woodstock and all of a sudden, open drug use. Before that, I mean, if there was, what drug use went on was...
Your generation thought we was all a bunch of nuts, didn't you?
Yeah, but I mean, socially, a whole bunch of things erupted in the midst of our society at that time. Now, in addition to that, just like the last caller said, there was the switch to the environment, to ecology, to that popped out there. And at the same time, we were saying... Save the whales, save the seals. So we passed the Marine Mammal Protection Act. We started whining at that time about wilderness. We've got to have roadless wilderness areas.
Protect the environment.
You know, it
got to have
was,
a clean environment.
But it all sort of came up together. And at the same time, looking back on it, I've been married for 35 years, raised three kids, and they're all doing fine. But you look back on it, and that's when... When this, not only free love, but the idea that women could have babies and not be married, men could get women pregnant, didn't have to marry them. And at the same time, right in the middle of that, Roe v. Wade popped out.
Right.
And the federal government said, well, you can have abortions whenever you want them. And then they started off with the 3 months, and then 6 months, and 9 months, and then partial birth abortion. And the idea that any woman anywhere would ever be told, she couldn't control her body, which is just code words for
kind of turned into a living hell. We have another caller, and I forgot your name. I'm sorry. Go ahead, caller. Hello, Roger.
Yeah, Roger in Pennsylvania.
How you doing, sir?
Yeah, just quickly, no, Vicki called yesterday. I'm thinking, maybe hoping she'll call back today, and yourself. Wednesday nights in particular here on RBN is when the Freedom 21 show, and I missed the last Wednesday, so for all I know, you were there. But they just came back off the Freedom 21 conference as well. Now Vicki called in with these two bill numbers. These might be pretty new and almost totally unknown the way she cast them yesterday. The one was the Senate's S-1315, and the other one was Senate Resolution 7431, and I'll leave it at that because that's all I know.
Say the numbers again, please.
Okay, S-1315 and S-Res-7431.
Okay. People, you need to check those out.
Yeah, when on RPN here, that would be 10 p.m. Central on 7.490 or 5.835. where you can catch Dr. Stan the rest of the weekdays for those 2 hours starting then. And then the Freedom 21 show fills in for him every Wednesday. God bless.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you, sir, for your work. And, yes, Dr. Stanley Mondeed is on RBN later on in the evening. And very good man, John Dunn, good by getting him. And sounds like we've got another break. Man, this hour has flown by. Y'all stay with us. My name is Timothy Revere. We'll be back. Back, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Timothy Revere. I'm hosting for Chris Rutter on American Exposé today. Real quick, the name Timothy Revere is a handle that was given to me by a very dear friend of mine. And if he's listening today, I love you, Jay Wally. Jay Wally works with the Paragon Foundation and had a stroke just before I started my broadcast a couple of years ago, and hasn't been able to communicate, but he does listen and he does understand, and that's where I got that name, and that's why I use it, because Jay gave it to me. We're speaking today with Jim Beard. Another quick thing, we're going to be switching hosts. I have a show to get ready for tonight. Sam from Missouri is going to pick up the second half of the broadcast. Jim, are you going to be able to stick around and speak with Sam?
Yeah, I sure am. If you got a place for me, I'll be glad to stick
around. Oh, man, I tell you, I guarantee you Sam is going to want to love to talk to you.
Good.
You are a very, very knowledgeable and brave man. This man spent, 35 years, Jim?
Yep.
He spent 35 years working for the federal government. He watched all this going on and scratched his head and finally figured it out. And now he's out here telling us all about it. And we have been fortunate enough to last on him for 2 hours today. Praise God. Jim and people like Jim are hard to come by, and we're very lucky to have him. And again, please support the broadcast. 1015 South Mays Street, M-A-Y-S, Round Rock, Texas, 78664, 800-724-2719. Jim, I don't know where to leave it, really. You make this end of the job simple. You're an encyclopedia of what's going on in this country. It's Agenda 21 from the word go, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's the idea of whether they're calling it sustainable development or they're calling it ecosystem management or invasive species or endangered species or whatever they want to call it. It basically represents an increasing the size and power of the central government, of the federal government, and diminishing the power of state government and of private property owners. And of all the citizens of the United States, so far as their rights and traditions to use natural resources, whether they hunt or fish or ranch or farm or just go horseback riding or hiking or camping, what these movements are doing is putting more land under government control, and where the government can buy more land, which they do every year, they buy lots of new land, they then try to close it down, call it wilderness, call it roadless area, call it critical habitat, call it an invasive species area, whatever they want to call it, and then they just stop you from taking your dog in there, they won't let you ride a horse in there, they won't let you hunt in there anymore, they won't let anybody stock trout in there anymore. They'll tell you that they're going to have different kinds of plants there in the future and different kinds of fish in there that aren't really that good to fish for, but that's what they say should be there. And at the same time, they'll give lots of money to the academic professors from the universities who come up with studies and research grants that back up what they want to do and justify them to the courts. And people like you and I are everywhere, just one at a time, gotten rid of, whether it's getting rid of the trappers in Massachusetts or New Jersey or getting laws passed that, make it illegal to even have a trap in your home.
Jim, we're right down to the end of the line, and I want to thank you for being here, and I like to close every show that I do the way my good friend Mr. William Cooper used to close his show. God bless each and every single one of you people. I love all y'all. Have a good day.